नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Continuing from this morning where we were reading from the Chaturshloki verses of the Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9. This morning we were reading from text 35. And we'll continue. In the Sanskrit of the verse, this is the personality of Godhead speaking to Lord Brahma. So he speaks Pravishtani, up Pravishtani. It's the Pravishta means enters, and up Pravishta means does not enter. Personality of God is explaining both things, that is, matter and spirit. In terms of matter, he states that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time I am outside of everything. Somebody can get a Bhagavad Gita. In the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, a similar idea is expressed by Krishna. In the 9th chapter, it's Parama Guhyam, the supremely, the most confidential knowledge, is how Prabhupada is given the title. And in this most confidential knowledge chapter, Krishna is declaring everything else that he's presented so far. And he's presented so far knowledge of the soul, knowledge of the supreme soul distinct from the individual soul. He's introduced bhakti in principle. Now he's going more deeply into the nature of pure devotional service. And it's through pure devotional service that this most confidential knowledge can be understood, or say it the opposite. It can't be understood except through devotional service. And Krishna explains, or he says, those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. But the whole of Vedic knowledge is to overcome repeated birth and death in this world. So, take to devotional service. And in the language of Bhagavad Gita, we're going to compare this to the verse 35 of the 9th chapter, Canto 2. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat abhyaktamurtina matstani sarvabhutani na chaham teshu avastata. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet behold, everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. All beings are in me. Next verse. Everything that is created does not rest in me. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation. Bhutabrinna chabhutosta. For myself is the very source of creation. So now we'll go back to the first verse of the first canto that we were discussing, where in the first verse Krishna is asserting that he is the absolute truth. Excuse me. Vyasadeva is asserting that Krishna is the absolute truth by stating Jagmadyasya Yataha, creation, maintenance, and annihilation come from Sri Krishna. He is that source. He is that absolute truth. And he is Swarat. He's independent. He's not deriving that capacity from anyone else but himself. He's the absolute truth. Now we'll go to the Chaturshloki verses, where the Supreme Lord is stating about himself. He's the absolute truth. During, prior to, during, and after the cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. He's the absolute truth. Whatever exists is coming from him. It has this inseparable relationship of oneness with him. But now comes the difference. It comes from him, but he has his own existence, like he's saying here in the ninth chapter. He has his own existence in the spiritual realm. So he doesn't leave his spiritual realm to enter the cosmic manifestation. But he does so by his expansions. So, same with this verse that we discussed this morning, and then from a slightly different angle, but the energies that make up this world, they're Krishna's energies. So, in that sense, the elements enter into the cosmic manifestation. So the avyakta into the vyakta state. The vyakta, the manifest state, is nothing but the elements of the Supreme Lord manifest. But when the Supreme Lord manifests those elements, it's not like the spiritual world becomes empty. The place vacated because now there's this material creation. And the material creation is vast. It's huge. It's incomprehensibly huge. As far as the eye can see, as far as the imagination can wander. And that's just this one universe of the Vedic description. There's unlimited such universes. And this happens to be a smaller one amongst the universes. And other universes are much bigger. It's inconceivable. So that's a lot of energy. So if all of that energy is manifest over here, in this material realm, there's a big vacancy over there. Prabhupada described it this way. He said, when they build a big skyscraper, it means there's a big hole in the ground somewhere. Right? Because all those elements it takes to build a big skyscraper came from somewhere. Somewhere there's a big hole. Or a lot of big holes. To make, big, that's all they're doing. They're moving from here to there. But Krishna doesn't move from here to there. Krishna expands, and when he expands his energies, it's not reduced. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vishishyate. How vast is that Purnam, from which so many Purnams emanate, and the original Purnam is not reduced. There isn't such a thing materially. It means Krishna is fully spiritual, and that's the import of this message. We'll do it this way. Try in your mind to think of something that's so big, that you take away a piece of that something that's so big, it's not reduced. And materially, there is not such a thing that's so big. take away a piece of it, and it's reduced. But Krishna is that big. He's Purnam. He's like, you know, the real deal. He's complete. So he can expand completely or partial. So he has plenary expansions and partial expansions. And that's the Purusha avatars and the living entities. And then there's his energetic expansions. And his energies are so complete. Although those energies are expanded, the supply, the big warehouse, isn't reduced. An example Prabhupada gives is the sun. As the sun, since the beginning of creation, is spreading its heat and light, and the temperature of the sun is not reducing. It's not burning out. It's continuing. If the sun were to burn out, the universe is finished. And when the sun does burn out, the universe is finished. But that's something material. But something spiritual doesn't burn out. It's inexhaustible. And that's the nature of the absolute truth. When expanding things, like the cosmic manifestation, he's not reduced. So he's spread everywhere, but he's not spread everywhere. Because in his fullness, he's existing in the spiritual realm. His energies and himself. We mentioned that this morning. This is text 35 of chapter 9. Go back some verses in this chapter, and it's before Lord Brahma speaks, he meets Lord Brahma. He meets Lord Brahma at the very beginning of creation. Before there's even creation, he sees the spiritual world in its fullness. Just like it said that Vyas saw the spiritual world. Did you know that? I'll describe it this way. Narada, this is during the creation, Narada gave an instruction to Vyas. Sit down in meditation, in samadhi, in complete trance. Fix your mind upon the personality of Godhead. And whatever it is that you experience, let that be the subject matter of the next literature that you write. Explain that in terms of Vedic codes and references. So Vyas is the disciple of Narada. He followed his spiritual master. He sat in trance. He saw the personality of Godhead in fullness. Same thing Brahma saw. Because seeing the Lord in fullness means his whole abode, his whole entourage, all of his potencies, all of his expansions, in fullness. He saw the whole thing, the whole spiritual realm, seated on the bank of the river Saraswati. Just like we were reading in this morning's purport, Prabhupada was speaking of the transcendentalist, because of pure love for Krishna, he sees the spiritual world like, not the same, but like television. And it broadcasts from the spiritual world. And he's got his receiver on. And he sees live, whatever you call it, simultaneous broadcast.
Live feed.
Live stream, it's like this thing. As it's, you know, in real time, he's seeing the spiritual world within his heart. Although he's in this material world. But Krishna is in the spiritual world. So, Vyas had that realization. Brahma had that realization. Certainly it's a different, within time, it's a different time and it's a different circumstance, but it's the same principle. The principle is, Brahma is the firstborn living entity. There's nothing in all directions except darkness. There's no sun. There's no light. It's in the universe that has this shell. And in the lower half of the universe is Garbhodak Ocean and Garbhodak Shai Vishnu, and from his navel comes his lotus stem and a lotus flower and Brahma on top of the lotus flower. When he's meditating and there's nothing but darkness, then all of a sudden he sees the spiritual world because the Supreme Lord reveals that to him. And he approaches the Supreme Lord. The terminology is, he approaches the Yogpith, the place where the Supreme Lord is residing, his throne. And as he approaches the Supreme Lord, he sees surrounding him all of his expansions personified, including those expansions that is his Shaktis, that according to the Lord's will, they manifest as the cosmic manifestation. That's the big warehouse. It's the potencies of the Supreme Lord personified. Like, for example, the personified Vedas are surrounding the Supreme Lord, offering him beautiful hymns of praise. But those same personified Vedas are manifested here. Where did these things come from? They came from there. They exist in the spiritual world. The saying is there, as above, so below. Or you can't have something below that's not existing above. Everything that exists here has a spiritual counterpart, including earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and mind, intelligence, and false ego, and the entire, all the elements of material creation. So those elements of material creation are expanded and they're manifested in this realm, which is being stated here. Please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos, and at the same time, they're not entering into the cosmos, because they're fullness exists undepleted in the spiritual realm. But they're, by the Lord's will, manifested here. And the same. I myself also exist within everything created. Pravishtani, apravishtani. Tata, teshu, na teshvaham. I'm in them and not in them. So Krishna is in them. He expands himself as the super soul within every living being, as a super soul, and within every atom of creation. But as Krishna expands himself as Paramatma within every atom of creation, he's existing in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. He's not within everything. He has his own existence. Prabhupada gives this worldly example. It's a very simple one. He says, imagine there's an industrialist and he's playing golf on the golf course. So while he's playing golf on the golf course, he's got this big factory and every little detail of that factory is running on because the industrialist has set it up that way. It's running on his energy. But he's not there running around the factory. He's out on the golf course playing golf. It's on his energy. But he's not present. He's present through his energy, but he's on the golf course. So, not exactly the same. Krishna's not on the golf course, but Krishna's in Goloka Vrindavan performing transcendental pastimes with his loving devotees. And in this material world, there are living entities who are not loving devotees. They're fruitive workers trying to get Krishna and enjoying Krishna's property. So they're very busy with their material affairs, and Krishna is providing the elements, the energies, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and so on, to fulfill their desires. And it's all happening by this direction. Maya adhyakshena prakriti. Suyate sacharacharam. The moving and the non-moving living beings. Both are fully dependent upon Krishna supplying not only the energies, even the intelligence, how to manipulate those energies. Because if Krishna cuts that supply, one can't do anything. So everything is fully dependent upon Him. So He's present through those empowerments of those energies. But He's not there at the same time. He's fully present in Goloka Vrindavan. And while He's fully present in Goloka Vrindavan, He's not distracted by so many living entities making so many demands. I want this and I want that. Not a clerk that's at a desk. There's a big warehouse behind him and people have so many demands. I want this and I want that. And I want it now. So we discussed some of these points this morning. I want to read a little bit more from Prabhupada's purport and then make a little comparison with what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, how he addresses this in his commentary. In the Bhagavad Gita, 1864, the Lord advised Arjuna about bhakti yoga. Sarva guyatamam bhuyaha shinume paramam vachaha. Krishna says, just hear from me again about the most confidential part of the instructions in Bhagavad Gita. Now, chapter 9 is the most confidential knowledge. Parama Guyam. Okay, so this is Sarva Guyatamam Guyaha. And I'm going to explain it again. What did he explain before? I just read it. I'm everywhere. Everything is within me. And I am outside of everything. And everything is not in me. I call that Upanishadic double talk. It's a mystery. What is this? And it remains a mystery except for the most confidential knowledge key that opens the lock. And that key that opens the lock is devotional service. It's devotion, but it's also through the medium of devotional service. Just like this. Since I've been here, three times I was asked the same question. Working for Krishna in the workplace. It's a common question. It's mysterious because, you know, work in the workplace has nothing to do with, for most people, their consciousness. It isn't anything to do with working for Krishna. It has to do with having a job so you can take care of your family expenses, you can pay your bills, so you can come to the temple and chant for Krishna, hear about Krishna, worship Krishna. And the workplace is something else. But that's not our Bhagavad Gita teaching. Our teaching is not a secular teaching. So much for Krishna, and so much for my family, or my worldly duties. That's what a secular theology is. Someone was asking during this weekend about this morning, about having dialogue with persons of other religions, you know, interfaith dialogue, is that a good thing to do? My first encounter with that was with a professor from the Harvard Divinity School who was a Christian theologian, and his name is Harvey Cox. Had deep admiration for the Hare Krishna movement, although he's a Christian theologian. And I first joined the Hare Krishna temple in Boston, and the circumstance happened sometime later. I visited Hari Cox at his home with some devotees, and I can't even remember exactly what the context was. It wasn't a home program, it was a visit to his home. And there was some discussion about his book that he had just written and published called Secular City. Secular City. And it was like, he was complaining, the book was complaining, that Christianity had become secular. And secular, so I was unfamiliar with the term, and it was, so it was explained. It's this, you know, this much of your life is for God, and then that part of your life is for the world. It's your worldly duties of life. Like what a lot of temples and churches and synagogues are. You know, when you want to be religious, you go to the church or temple and synagogue. And then you leave the temple, and then it's, you know, it's your worldly life. It's like, you know, attendance at our Sunday programs, when it's Super Bowl, it goes down. When it's the cricket match, it goes down. When it's really nice weather and it's, you know, time for swimming and golfing and outdoor sports, it goes down. Because, you know, anyway, I remember growing up as a little kid, you know, that if it was a really nice day for because I lived by a lake for winter, for water sports or for golf, or, you know, a lot of people, they would go out early to play their golf games so they could come to the Sunday worship and then go back out to the golf course. And some people just went, you know, right into their car. And anyway, you know, when you're in the church, as soon as people went outside the church, they're smoking their cigarette and you know, doing their other things that you don't do inside because that's sacred. But as soon as you step outside the door, it's okay because that's the worldly part of life. That's secularism. But life and devotion is not. It's Yad Karoshi, Yad Asnasi, Yad Jehosi, Vidasi, Yad Tapas, Yasi Kaunteya. Everything should be Madarpana, this for Krishna. Whatever you do, not this part and not that part. Whatever you do. So, in the workplace, or in the home, with your families, with your, you know, all aspects of life have the same devotional potency or potential. If they're acted upon in the proper consciousness. And if you don't act in proper consciousness, then you'll see this distinction. So, the verse is saying, don't see that distinction. The practical application is, see Krishna everywhere. That the entry point is through devotional service. The same was confirmed by Brahmaji to Narada in the following words. This is going back to text 29. No, it's not. Idam bhagavatam nama yan me bhagavato ditam sangraho yam vibhuti nam tam etad vipuli kuru. Brahmaji said to Narada, it's earlier in this canto, he said, whatever I have spoken to you about the Bhagavatam was explained to me by the Supreme Personality Godhead. And I am advising you to expand these topics nicely so that people can easily understand the mysterious Bhakti Yoga by transcendental loving service of the Lord. It is to be noted here that the mystery of Bhakti Yoga was disclosed to Brahmaji by the Lord Himself. Brahmaji explained the same mystery to Narada. Narada explained the mystery to Vyas. Vyas explained it to Shukadeva Goswami. And that same knowledge is coming down in the unalloyed chain of disciplic succession. If one is fortunate enough to have received the knowledge in the transcendental disciplic succession, surely he he will have the chance to understand the mystery of the Lord and that of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sound incarnation of the Lord. So to unravel this Upanishadic-like double talk, the elements enter and do not enter. The Lord enters and does not enter. Here's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur addresses this. Even the translation is a little bit different. Here's how he translates. Just as the elements enter into all beings and also remain separate, I enter into all beings and remain separate when I perform my pastimes. In my pastimes, related to the material world, I remain detached. And in the pastimes related to the devotees, I'm attached. Interesting. Same Sanskrit. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a particular approach to it. But he then refers to, in his commentary, the previous verse. In the previous verse, I've reviewed these several times, but in the previous verse, the Supreme Lord is explaining what is Maya. Do you remember that explanation? What is Maya? Maya is to see that something exists and is of value separate from the Supreme Lord. Know that to be my illusory potency. Because previously he said, everything is me. Before, during, and after cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. The next verse says, if you see other than that, that's Maya. That's what Maya is. Maya is seeing, you know, here's something, you know, a piece of creation, and it doesn't belong to anybody. It exists independently of anybody, including Krishna. So I make it mine. Now it's mine. And I'm the enjoyer of it because it didn't belong to anybody and I made it mine. I'm the enjoyer of this little piece of creation. Now my program is to find as many pieces of material creation as I can and make it mine throughout my whole life. That's my project. Vindrasru Prabhu calls it, everybody has their God project. We try to make things ours and be the enjoyer of those things that are ours. And sometimes, unlawfully, people usurp the property of others, at least according to state law. They usurp the property of others and try to make it theirs. And then they get arrested and put in jail and put on trial. And if they're a thief, they're in big trouble. Because they unlawfully, but so do it lawfully. Take the property that didn't belong to you and make it yours. So persons enter this world owning nothing. They leave the world owning nothing. And in between, their lives are very busy trying to make things theirs. And that's material life. And be the enjoyer of those things. And spiritual life is to recognize nothing belongs to me. It all belongs to Krishna. And then you're free from illusion. So then how do you act in relation to those things that have come from Krishna? That's what this verse is. This verse is about devotional service. You act in such a way that you acknowledge this is Krishna's energy. And I'm interacting with this energy that belongs to Krishna in such a way that I'm using it to serve Him. That's what devotional service is. And it's actually very straightforward, but for the non-devotee it's very mysterious. But if through the agency of devotional service, it discloses Krishna. So here's what he writes for the translation of 34. One should understand my Maya by whose power real objects are perceived through vidya and false objects are perceived through avidya. You know, from Ishopanishad? When, in order to enter into the kingdom of God, one must know very well the process of vidya and avidya. Familiar with that verse from Ishopanishad? Vidyam cha vidyam chayas tad vedo vayam saha avidyam rityam tirtha mityam. Know that verse? So, as in Ishopanishad, so also in these essential verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's quite a difference between vidya and avidya. So I'm not going to go into the detail of this text 34. He gives an example of pots and cloth. When the light's on, you can see there's a pot and there's some cloth. But when the light goes out, the pot and the cloth are there, but you just can't see them. So that's vidya and avidya. And in that state of darkness, one may have some fear. Maybe there's a snake. Maybe there's a thief. Ooh, and I feel fear. Although there's no thief and there's no snake. So what is, one can't detect, and what isn't, one thinks is real. And one's emotional experience is based upon both. So misapprehension and proper apprehension, or proper understanding of things, is just a question of light or absence of light. Because what is darkness, by definition? The absence of light. And when there's light, there's no darkness. So this illusory potency, Maya, conceals Krishna and ourselves, our own real identity. Within this body, there's a spirit soul. We don't see it. We don't even acknowledge it. We're not tuned into its existence. But that's who we really are. But instead, we're thinking something that we're not. I'm American. And many of you are from India. I asked one little boy, we were visiting their home, real talkative, you know which one I mean, he runs around all the time on Sunday. He's everywhere. He thinks he's super soul. He's everywhere. He came, went into their home and he was jumped right in front of me and go, "Hi!" Like, you know, very gregarious little boy. So right away, I don't know what prompted me to say this, I said, "Are you American or Indian?" He said, "I'm Indian." Because, you know, he's born in America, he's behaving like, you know, a little bit out of control American. Bit of a nice, little, nicely controlled little Indian boy. I'm Indian. But our real identity is neither. Our real identity is spirit soul, and we're caught up in the identification of the covering and thinking something that we're not. And a person that's, we say clinically, a person that thinks they're somebody that they're not, and they behave as if they're somebody that they're not, they're crazy. I'll share this anecdotal experience with you. And this is from our days in New York City and the Manhattan Temple on 55th Street. You maybe have read about it in Lilamrita. It was a fantastic experience. Right in Midtown Manhattan, 12-story building, skyscraper. Wonderful place. So many devotees would attend Mangalarti. So one Mangalarti, right in the middle of Mangalarti, there were like, I don't know, 250 devotees at Mangalarti, imagine. You know, some of the most famous kirtan devotees of in the history of ISKCON. Every morning a different one leading the kirtan. Fantastic experience. And right in the middle of the kirtan, one Bhaktin, who was a European girl, she all of a sudden had like an episode, and she started speaking in French and screaming. And she was, you know, one of Joan of Arc's people, and it was the revolution. So something happened, I don't know, like, you know, some chemical, something happened in her brain somewhere. And she was a Kshatriya lady fighting with Joan of Arc for whatever it was that Joan of Arc was fighting for. And it took 10 strong men to contain her and put her in a side room until the ambulance people can come and help her out the front door. And she, because she was so energized with this, she had something, so one can assume, something like in a previous life, that was an experience of hers, and something clicked, something got triggered, and she was speaking French and screaming, revolution, and, you know, carrying on. Like, you know, she didn't have any guns and swords and anything, but she was, if she had, she would have used them. So she was thinking she was somebody that she was not. Maybe she was in her previous life, but she certainly wasn't in this life. So when somebody thinks they're somebody if they're not, clinically, they're crazy. Supposing somebody walked around like this with their hand in their vest and they're short. I am Napoleon. Clinically, they're crazy. Prabhupada writes, you know, there was a murder case in India, and the person who committed the murder pleaded insanity. So the judge assigned a professional clinician, psychiatrist, to examine the person to see if he was crazy. And when the psychiatrist was put on the witness stand, he said, Your Honor, as far as I'm concerned, everybody is more or less crazy. This man is a little more crazy, some people a little less crazy, some people more or less crazy. When we think that we're somebody that we're not, and we act as if we're somebody that we're not, we're crazy. And that's the condition of identification with this body and forgetting our real identity as spirit soul. And that's what Maya does. Maya covers our real identity. Whatever, however strong an identification we have for who we are not really, doesn't make the strength of that misidentification reality instead of illusion. It's illusion. But the flip side is, there's this spiritual energy, or yoga maya, that discloses our identity, and it discloses Krishna. And the medium of that, or for contacting that yoga maya potency, is the subject of matter of this verse. That's the platform of devotional service, or the realm of extending ourselves in service unto Krishna. So here's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur presents that. In this verse, the Lord is now going to describe how he performs his pastimes in the material and spiritual worlds, which are subject to Maya and Yoga Maya respectively. Deep. Very, very fascinating subject. Each of these answers by the Lord are responses to questions by Brahma. Here's the question. Text 28. Brahma asks, O Master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them. That's your energies. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. In the purport, Prabhupada explains the metaphor. A spider has a little spider body, and the spider body wants to create a house or a place for himself. So from his own body, the saliva, he says, the secretions from the body of the spider makes a web. from his own body, he makes a web and he moves around in his web. And after some time, if he so desires, he withdraws the web by withdrawing that fiber back within his body. So the Lord does the same. He creates from his own potencies. Sometimes he enters into his potencies. He enters into this cosmic manifestation by his avatars. And then he removes himself from this material world by his own will, and sometimes removes the whole cosmic manifestation. I remember speaking on this verse some places at a university, and right after the morning class I was taking a little Japa walk, and I saw this huge, it was like the early morning sun, was this huge spider web and this big, fat, plump spider just sitting right in the middle of his web waiting for a fly to come, innocently walking along and gets stuck, and then he comes and zaps him and wraps him up in his web. And I watched it happen. Poor fly, a little insect. So Krishna is not predatorial like a spider, but he expands this cosmic manifestation from his own body. So Brahma wants to understand, can you explain those energies, how he does it? Because it's an appropriate question to ask. Because Brahma has to take those energies and shape the material creation. That's his service. He's the creator of the universe. And for ourselves, it's far smaller, but we also take some little piece of the material creation and do something with it, and that's called our career. And that's what we do for our livelihood. Some little piece. So how to engage ourselves with the Lord's energies and not be drawn into the illusion that the previous verse was speaking about, of thinking it exists separately from the Lord. Or the positive is how to see the presence of the Lord. All the while we're engaging in our prescribed duties of life, whether it's family, work, social, civic, personal, interpersonal, friendship, whatever it is, how to see the presence of the Lord, both in terms of his energies and in terms of he himself. Fully recognizing he has his own abode in the spiritual realm, but he's with us nonetheless. So, here's how Vishwanath Chakravarti summarizes. It's three short paragraphs. Just as the elements, such as ether, enter into living beings, such as devatas, men and animals, and since they are acquired by the jivas, at the same time do not enter into them, since they maintain a separate existence. I, that's Lord Vishnu, also enter into the elements, within every atom, and the living beings, within their hearts, and also do not enter them, remaining separately in my abode, which is Shuddha Sattva. Next paragraph. The entrance of the elements into the living beings is without attachment, since the elements are not conscious. Follow? So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is paraphrasing what the Lord is saying through this verse. So it's first person singular, I, but he's speaking the voice of the Lord. He's not attached to this material creation. He's conscious. It is not conscious. He enters into the room and doesn't become attached to the room. Like the ether, though I am conscious, like a man who lives in his house without attachment, I remain without attachment while entering, regulating, and protecting all beings. So as Super Soul, he expands himself as Super Soul, and under his direction, everything in relation to the material world happens or doesn't happen. But he does that in detachment, as he says in Bhagavad Gita. He's saying here, he's not attached. My pastimes are without attachment in relation to the elements and the living beings within the material world. Then he wants to make a contrast. In the spiritual realm, there's his loving devotees, and everything is conscious. And it's his own Svarup Shakti that makes up the spiritual world. And so there is a natural affinity or love or attachment for that. But I desire to show myself to my obedient devotees who have entered my heart, who have perfected themselves and who bow to me, remaining separate, not entering their hearts. I desire to offer my beauty to their eyes. I desire that my fragrance enters their nostrils and desire to fulfill their ears with the nectar of my sweet voice, speaking with them and answering them. I desire to make their limbs experience the sweet softness of my body by touching and embracing them. Thus situated inside my devotees, and externally as well, I perform pastimes with great attachment for my pure devotees beyond the gunas, whom I cannot give up. End of his commentary. There's a contrast between the spiritual and the material realm. There's a contrast between how the Lord reciprocates with those who are inimical to him and those that have love for him. He states it, same message in the Bhagavad Gita, Yayatam Mam Prapadyante, Tam Stataiva Pajamyam, Mama Marbhana Vartante. As we regard Krishna, if we regard Krishna with love, he reciprocates. If we regard Krishna with animosity, he reciprocates. He doesn't have animosity towards us, but he understands, oh, this person wishes to not have any relationship with me. But that's not possible because everything has relationship with me. Therefore, that living entity needs to be in the state of illusion where he can think, things are not in relation with me, and so the material world is created with this deluding potency so that living entities can think they have no relationship with God. And towards that, he's neutral. He's not name dvesho stina priyaha sarva samoham sarva bhuteshu. He's equal towards all, neither dvesha nor priya, animosity nor special dearness as far as the material realm is concerned. He remains neutral. But for those who approach him with great love and affection, he reciprocates. Oh, they want to experience and share their loving disposition with me. Then let me reciprocate with them in kind. He's still remaining neutral, but it's reciprocating with the mood of love and devotion. So it's through that love and devotion, not only we experience the happiness that's our natural condition, but the mysteries about Krishna become disclosed. It's only natural. Like, going back to the previous verse, when the light is there, you can see the pot and you can see the cloth that are in the room. You can see what's what. You can see the varieties of Krishna's paraphernalia. Sarahasyam tad angamcha, from this morning's discussion. Through the medium of devotional service, everything becomes disclosed, including Krishna. And how Krishna is situated in relation to his energies, which was Brahma's question from earlier in the chapter. very deep. But this essence, this is one of the nutshell verses or essence verses of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, which expand in various ways. So when later on, when you're reading some pastimes of Krishna, you can think of this verse and how Krishna is showing to his devotee his true identity. He discloses himself. Even he explains himself because of the love and devotion of that devotee. That's their eligibility to receive his confidential knowledge. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes?
So if
they have a witch together?
Yeah, sometimes they have like a
conflict?
No, like
pastimes together.
Yeah, like
how do people know about them?
Yeah. How do people?
Well, either Advaita Acharya discloses or somebody who is a pure devotee observes and they disclose. It happened like that with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Swarup Damodar. He disclosed. Or sometimes Rupa Goswami disclosed.
But when he says after each night...
But then someone told, obviously. Someone told. And in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was specifically wishing to conceal his identity as the Supreme Lord. But because he's the Supreme Lord, unto his devotees, they came to know that he's the Supreme Lord, because that's how devotees can understand those things. So if Krishna, if Lord Chaitanya then said, don't tell this to anybody, somewhere along the line they disclosed. Right? And in glorification of Lord Chaitanya. Yes?
But in the lecture you told that Lord Brahma came down, he saw the Supreme Lord in the throne.
Not Lord Brahma came down. Lord Brahma was seated on the lotus flower. And he was engaged in austerities for a long time. Right there, before him, on the lotus flower, the spiritual world was manifest. Yes, there's a verse.
So, what is the meaning?
Yes. For any activity, it's not directly related to this discussion. But what that verse means, how Srila Prabhupada has explained is, for any activity, you need jnana, ala, and kriya. You don't have that. If you have one of those three missing, you don't have activity. So to have those three, jnana, bala, and kriya, they're energies of the Lord. Through a living entity do anything, they're dependent upon the Lord, supplying knowledge, strength, and the capacity to endeavor. They're energies of the Lord mixing in different ways so that activity takes place. The living entity can then try to become independently an enjoyer. Or, if their knowledge is proper, they can endeavor to please the Lord in devotional service. Still, jnana, bhava, and kriya are required. And they come from the Lord. Okay? Anything else? Aditi.
I have two questions.
You do?
If Krishna wants us in the spiritual world...
If Krishna wants us in the spiritual world...
Then why did he create Yogamaya?
Why does he need Yogamaya?
Why did he create Yogamaya?
Why did he create Yogamaya? He didn't create Yogamaya. Yogamaya is. As Krishna is eternal, his energies are also eternal. And Yogamaya is one of those energies. So the Yogamaya potency is acting in the spiritual world. But if we develop an attitude, a bad attitude towards Krishna, that Yogamaya, just like Kamsa, Yogalaya became Durga. It was transformed into the external energy. Simply because of the regard of those with a bad attitude towards Krishna, an inimical attitude towards Krishna. Krishna transforms his energies. And Krishna can transform his energies. There's no difficulty for him to do that. Is there any reason why people die so young? Like the kid in school, the girl in school that died when she's just 7 years old. This just happened in her school. So what's the reason why someone who is 7 years old might die of a horrible disease like leukemia? Why? It's not a question of age, whether the living entity dies at any age.
Huh? It
could be any number of reasons, but it has to do with previous activity. Due to previous activity, you've taken birth in the family that you've taken birth in. And I took birth in the family that I took birth in, same for every one of us. And however long a duration of life we live, it has some relation between our previous activity and the present circumstance. And also as our life unfolds, the choices, the free will choices that we make in a moment-to-moment manner, it has something to do with how our life unfolds and how Krishna reciprocates with us. But something like you just questioned, at a very early stage, something very unfortunate happens, an early age death, it has to do with previous activity. Okay? Very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah.